Chapter 9. Voyage. Reaction was mixed as one of the Legion Masters strode into Black Market that night. Most stood stock still, freezing in place, variously wondering who had done something wrong, or if their own transgressions were about to be punished. Some fell to their knees in respect, or bowed their heads in greeting. Several fled at the first sight of the Master's red eye lenses emerging from the blackness. Most of these, oil-stained workers from the engine decks, ran down the many corridors leading from the communal crew chamber. Their escape went ignored. The warrior moved through the parting crowd to stand before a single man who tended a market table, selling scraps of white cloth and charms woven from female hair. Nearby, humans dimmed their lamp packs as a sign of respect in the presence of a Legion Master.
"Hark here," the warrior growled. His vox voice was a guttural snarl,
a rasping coming through the vocabulator in the helm's mouth grill. The man flinched back, cowed by fear, kept straight only by his stubborn pride.
"Lord?"
The warrior reached for the gladius sheathed at his shin, his movements deliberate and slow. As he rose with the blade in his hand, eye lenses still locked to the mortal's sweating features, he growled another three words.
"Take this sword."
Talos dropped the gladius onto the table with a clang, scattering trinkets off the edges. The blade was as long as the human's arm. Its silver length turned amber in the dim lighting of the communal chamber.
"Take it. I'm due to meet with the Tech Adept, and that meeting goes delayed while I remain here. So take the sword, mortal. My patience is finite."
With trembling fingers, the man did as he was ordered.
"Lord?"
he asked again, his voice quavering now.
"The blade in your hands was forged on Mars in an age now believed to be myth by almost every soul in the Imperium. It has cut the heads from men, women, children, aliens, and beasts. With these hands, I pushed it into the beating heart of a man who ruled an entire world."
The warrior reached to his belt, where an Adeptus Astartes helm hung on a short, thick chain against his hip. With a jerk, he wrenched the helm free, letting it thud onto the table where the sword had lain a moment before. Red ceramite marked by dents and scratches, green eye lenses, both cracked and lifeless. The helm stared at Archaea in dead-eyed silence.
"This helm is all that remains of the warrior that murdered your daughter," said Talos. "I killed him myself in the running battles that raged across the decks as we fled from Krythe. And when it was done, I severed his head from his shoulders with the very blade you now struggle to lift in your hands."
The man made to lower the sword, to rest it back on the table.
"What do you wish of me, Lord?"
"It is said you sow the seeds of discord among the mortal crew, that you preach this vessel is damned, and all who sail aboard her are destined to suffer the same fate as your daughter. Is that so?"
"The omens..."
"No," Talos chuckled. "If you wish to be alive at the end of this conversation, you will not speak of omens. You will speak the truth, or you will never speak again. Do you preach of the Covenant's damnation?"
Archaea's breath misted in the cold air.
"Yes, my lord,"
the warrior nodded.
"Very well. That does not anger me. Slaves are not forbidden emotions and opinions, even misguided ones, as long as they obey their duties. What are your duties, Archaea?"
The aging man backed up a step.
I am just a menial, Lord. I do whatever is asked of me by the crew."
Talos took a step closer. His active armor growled with teeth-itching resonance.
And does the crow ask you to preach that every one of them is damned?
Please, don't kill me, Lord. Please.
Talos stared down at the man.
I did not come here to kill you, fool. I came to show you something, to teach you a lesson every one of us must learn if we are to remain sane in the lives we lead.
Talos gestured to the helm as he continued.
That warrior killed your daughter. His blade tore her in half, Archia. She would have taken several moments to die, and I promise you those moments were more painful than anything you can possibly imagine. Your wife also died in the raid, did she not? Slain by a blood angel blade. If she was with your daughter at the end, then this warrior likely butchered them both.
Talos drew his own blade, a blood angel sword as long as the human was tall, prized from the loose fingers of a slain hero. The polished and winged artifact was wrought of silver and gold, its craftsmanship unmistakable, its value uncountable. He slowly, gently rested the golden blade on the aging man's shoulder, the edge just shy of kissing the mortal's neck.
Perhaps this was the last thing they both saw. A faceless warrior towering above them, blade ready to fall, to cut, to cleave them apart.
Tears stood in the man's eyes now. When he blinked, they trailed down his cheeks in quicksilver rushes.
Lord, he said.
One word, nothing more. Talos read the question in the broken man's eyes.
I have come to ease your doubts, Archia. I did what I could. I tore her murderer apart. I carry his memory with me, and the taste of his blood on my tongue as I ate his heart. Your daughter died, and you are entitled to your grief. But here, now, you have the murderer's remains. Use the sword, break the helm, take the vengeance you crave.
At last he found his voice.
I do not wish vengeance, Lord.
No.
The Night Lord smiled behind the faceplate, pulling the healing muscles tight. Despite his words to Octavia, his face was a mask of constant aggravating pain now. He'd been considering stripping the skin from the left side of his skull, deadening the nerves, and replacing the scar tissue with bare augmetics. He still wasn't sure why he felt such reluctance to do so.
If vengeance is hollow, Talos continued, then you have simply not suffered enough. Revenge is all any of us can hope for. Each time we must lick new wounds and wait for them to heal. Every soul on this ship, mortal and immortal alike, accepts that as truth. All except you. You, who insist you've been wronged more than any other. You, who dare to whisper dissent into the shadows, forgetting that your masters dwell within that same darkness. The shadows whisper to us, Archia. Remember, little human, treachery on this ship is punishable by being flayed alive.
Talos was no longer speaking directly to him. The warrior turned, addressing the crowd that ringed them both, even as he aimed his words for Archaea's ears.
So answer me something. Do you mumble your traitorous words because of selfish grief? As if you are the only one to have lost something precious. Or is it because you truly think your fellows will rise up in rebellion against the Legion?
My daughter!
The Night Lord was a blur of movement and a purr of servo joints. One moment he faced the crowd, his back to Archia. The next, the weeping man was held aloft by a fistful of graying hair, boots hanging above the decking.
Your daughter was one of hundreds to lose her life that night, the Night Lord growled, on a ship that falls apart beneath our feet even now because of the damage it sustained. Do you want me to apologize for not protecting her, or would that also change nothing? Would those words even true ring as hollow as worthless vengeance? Will they bring her back?
Talos hurled the man aside, sending him crashing into a table that toppled under the impact.
We lost dozens of warriors that same night you lost your daughter. Dozens of souls who had stood on the very soil of Terra and watched the walls of the Emperor's palace tumble to the ground. Warriors who devoted eternity to fighting an unwinnable war in the name of vengeance. We lost hundreds of mortal crew. Every mortal on board lost someone or something precious that night. And they swallowed their grief, settling for the hope of revenge. But not you. You must tell everyone else that their losses mean nothing next to yours. You frantically whisper that everyone must piss themselves in fear at an unwritten future.
Talos sheathed both blades and shook his head.
I grieve for her loss, little father, for her life and what it represented in this wretched sanctuary we are all forced to suffer. I regret that all I could give her was the peace of vengeance. But let me be utterly clear, mortal. You live only because we allow it. You drew your first breath in an empire we built, and you serve us as we tear it down. Hate us, despise us, we will never care. Even as we shed blood to protect you when we must. Heed these words, human. Do not dare put your heart's losses above anyone else's. The warp always finds its way into fools. Poisonous thoughts are a beacon to the never-born.
The crowd watched with rapt eyes. Talos turned, his eye lenses meeting the gaze of every serf in the chamber, one after the other.
We sail through bleak tides, and I will lie to none of you about what awaits in our future. The Covenant bleeds, crying out for repair. We draw near to the dock at Hell's Iris, a place some of you will remember without affection. Once we are docked, remain locked in your quarters, unless you are attending to essential duties. Every soul among you with access to a weapon, make sure you carry it with you at all times.
One of the crowd, a new slave from the Ganges, stepped forward.
What's happening?
Talos turned to the man, looking down at his unshaven face. It was only then the Night Lord realized he'd been speaking in Ostraman. Half the crew were new. They had no experience with the dead language.
Trouble,
Talos spoke in low Gothic, the Imperium's mongrel tongue. He was growing more comfortable with it since Octavia came on board.
We are making for a haven of renegades in the heart of Imperial space, and will arrive at its borders within a handful of hours. There is a chance the ship will be boarded while we linger in dock. If that happens, defend the Covenant with your lives. The Eighth Legion are not generous masters, but we are saints compared to the depraved souls we must ally with. Remember that, should you find yourself tempted by thoughts of escape.
Talos saved his last glance for Archaea.
Little father, if you defy the Legion with anything more than a selfish coward's whispered words in the future, I will carve the skin and muscle meat right from your bones. Your flayed skeleton will be crucified at the heart of this very chamber, hanging as a warning to all. Nod, if you accept these terms.
The aging man nodded.
A wise decision,
Talos replied, and stalked from the chamber. In the shadows of deeper corridors, he spoke four words into an open channel.
First claw to me.
He sat with his head cradled in shaking hands, gently rocking back and forth as he sat in the middle of a bare chamber, whispering the names of gods he hated. One of his brothers called to him over the jagged sound waves of the vox.
I come,
Uzas replied, rising to his feet. He lowered the immense blade, releasing the trigger to let the sword's teeth fall still. The engine in its hilt idled as the warrior listened to his brother's summons. Sweat bathed him beneath his armor, leaving his skin itching even as it soaked into the absorbent weave of his body glove.
On my way, Zarl voxed back.
The quill slowed in its scratching path across the parchment, then finally stopped. The warrior looked to the skull-faced helm on his writing desk, watching him with its unblinking eyes. Reluctantly, he placed the quill back in its inkpot. A dusting of fine-grained sand trickled over the parchment to help the letters dry, before the warrior reached to activate the vox mic in his collar.
As you wish, said Mercutian.
He walked the ship's corridors, staring into the darkness through red-stained lenses and flickering white targeting crosshairs. A rune chimed on his retinal display, his brother's name glyph pulsing for his attention. He blinked at it to reply.
Something amiss?
We are gathering in the Hall of Remembrance, Talos's voice came back.
That sounds tedious. What might the occasion be?
I want a full report of the necessary repairs before we talk.
I was right,
Sirion replied.
That is tedious.
Just get there.
Talos severed the link. The Hall of Remembrance echoed with the sound of divine industry. Servitors lifted and hauled, drilled and hammered, each one of them robed and hooded in black surplices, bearing the winged skull symbol of the Legion on their backs. Several had Nostraman glyphs tattooed on their foreheads, former serfs guilty of minor sins, sentenced to live out their lives as lobotomized, augmented drones. Scores of menials and servitors labored at tables and conveyor belts, constructing the explosive bolt shells used by the Legion's warriors, while others worked at wall-mounted consoles, deep-scrying parts of the ship and directing the repair teams. The entire hall resonated with the flood of chattering voices, clanging tools and beaten metal. Four great sarcophagi hung bound to one wall, wrapped in chains and supported by ceiling clamps. Only one remained within a protective stasis screen, its cracked surface halfway restored to perfection, though blurred by the field's blue mist. The warband's dreadnought coffins shivered as the ship gave another lurch, their chains rattling again. Each of the coffin's surfaces was immaculately wrought from precious metals, carvings lovingly etched into the armor. Such patient and diligent work was the responsibility of a master artisan, the craftsmanship a league apart from the simplistic repairs performed by most menials and slaves. First Claw regarded one another around the chamber's central hololithic table. A three-dimensional image of the Covenant of Blood rotated before them all, its flickering patchy contours flawed by stains of flashing red damage warnings. It pulsed in and out of existence in sympathy with the tremors shaking the ship.
That doesn't look good, Sirion noted.
It is not, Lucorifus rasped. Not good at all.
His presence had been an unwelcome surprise for First Claw upon entering, Talos knew without doubt that the raptor had been sent by the Exalted to serve as the shipmaster's eyes.
Tech adept, Talos turned to Deltrian. I need a complete listing of the repairs to be done, with the materials you'll need. I also need a time frame for how long the Covenant will be in dock undergoing overhaul.
Talos stood with Deltrian, opposite Zal and Lucorophus. Little could be considered similar between the three warriors. Talos stood in his Legion warplate, weapons sheathed, eyes calm, helm resting on the edge of the table. Lucorophus kept his weeping mask in place. In truth, Talos had no idea if the other warrior could even remove it anymore, and leaned forward with a graceless awkwardness, struggling to remain bipedal on his ceramite talons. Zal was also bareheaded, the skull helm locked to his thigh. He stood impassive in his beaten armor, his scarred features a map of unpleasant memories, and his black eyes always moving between Talos and Lucorophus. He wasn't subtle about it, wasn't even trying to be subtle. Zal sensed the genesis of a rivalry between the two warriors, and watched with keen eyes. Deltrian grinned because Deltrian always grinned. The chrome skeletal face beneath the black hood could form no other expression. As the tech priest spoke, vein wires and cable muscles in his cheeks and neck tightened and flexed. His voice was an automaton's emotionless screed.
The Immaterium propulsion engines have been subjected to an inadvisable degree of damage in the last 8 months.
Here Deltrian paused, turning his emerald eye lenses to Lucorophus.
But they function within permissible boundaries.
The tech adept's eyes hissed softly, moisturized by the coolant, mist sprays built into his tear ducts. Talos couldn't help but steal a glance. He kept his curiosity about Deltrian's personal reconstruction behind polite respect. But why even a tech priest of the Martian Mechanicum would rebuild himself to resemble an augmetic image of a skinless human was a mystery. He suspected it was because of Deltrian's bond with the Eighth Legion. This aspect, more given to inspiring fear in mortals, surely suited him better. Or perhaps it was a matter of faith, appearing as a synthetic version of the human skeleton to show the many changes Deltrian had undergone in his quest for mechanical perfection, as well as evidence that he acknowledged his mortal beginnings. Talos caught himself staring. With a guilty smile, he looked back at the hololithic. Deltrian gestured with a chrome claw to red patches across the ship's hull.
The flawed systems are located at these points. The hull sections in absolute need of complete reparation are located here, 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 and here. As for core systems, the Ninth Legion inflicted severe damage upon the actuality generators. Until this date, shipboard repairs have been sufficient to restore sustained Empyrean flight. If we do not dock soon for an overhaul of the actuality generators, the Immaterium engines will be throttled by failsafes, preventing their activation.
Meaning? Zal asked.
Meaning the Gala field is damaged, Talos answered. The warp engines won't work for much longer, unless the shield generators are repaired.
Yes,
Deltrian confirmed. He appreciated the purity of precision in the warrior's words. He nodded to Legiones Astartes 1210 preferred appellation Talos.
Precisely,
the tech adept finished.
Ninth! Blood angels,
Lucorophus rasped.
No longer a legion.
Acknowledged,
Deltrian tilted his head a moment.
Recorded,
Sirion gestured to the hololithic.
The Geller field is flawed?
Deltrian's voxponder unit built into his throat gave a blurt of machine code.
Terminally flawed, temporary repairs will degrade with greater frequency. The longer we remain in the Immaterium, the greater the potential of a breach risk.
This is going to take weeks.
Talos shook his head as he watched the hololithic ship turn.
Maybe even months.
Deltrian gave another blurt of vocalized code in a static rush of numerals, as close as the adept ever came to cursing.
The Immaterium engine flaw is not the Covenant's principal concern. Observe.
His skeletal fingers keyed in a code on the table's keypad. The hololithic shivered before them, several other areas along the hull flickering red. When none of the warriors said anything, Deltrian emitted a tinny growl.
I restate, observe.
Yes, I see, lied Sirion. It all makes sense now, but explain it for Ruzes.
Talos silenced his brother with a glare.
Humorous tech adept, what are we seeing here?
For several seconds, Deltrian merely watched the warriors as if awaiting some kind of punchline. When nothing was forthcoming, the tech adept pulled his black robe tighter, his silver facial features sinking deeper into the depths of his hood. Talos had never realized a mechanical skeleton could look exasperated while still grinning, but there it was.
These are projected statistics equating to damage we will sustain in the remaining days of our journey, based on the turbulence of the Immaterium so far.
Talos smoothed his gauntleted fingertips over the scars streaking down from his temple, unaware of the unconscious habit in the making.
That looks like enough to cripple the ship.
Almost, Deltrian allowed. Our navigator is untested and weak. She steers the ship through savage tides. She plows through warp waves because she can sense no way around them. Visualize the damage her route is inflicting upon the Covenant.
So she's not a smooth sailor, Zal grunted. Get to the point, tech adept.
In Nostraman vernacular, the navigator is shaking the ship apart.
Deltrian cancelled the hololithic.
I will state the situation in the simplest terms. Until this date, we have counted on ingenuity and the fictional concept of fortune. These resources are no longer viable. Slave 3-101, preferred appellation, Octavia, will destroy this ship through incompetence if she fails to make peace with the machine spirit and alter her techniques of navigation.
The raptor growled, drawing in breath through his speaker grill. Deltrian raised a hand of chrome bones to forestall Lycoriphus's comment.
No, do not interrupt this vocalization. There is more. We will reach the destination dock. I speak of eventualities and concerns for the future. She must learn to navigate with greater haste and proficiency, or she will continue wounding the Covenant each time she carries us into the Immaterium.
Talos said nothing.
Furthermore,
Deltrian pressed on,
our journey is hastening the erosion of several vital systems, ventilation, liquid waste recycling, the recharge generator pods supplying the port broadsides. The list is long and severe. Our vessel has sustained such a degree of damage in the last standard solar annum that less than 30% of function is operating within reliable parameters. As my servitor crews move deeper through the ship's organs in reconstruction operations, they locate new flaws and bring them to my attention.
Talos nodded, but remained silent.
I lack expertise in reading unaugmented facial emotional signifiers.
Deltrian tilted his head.
You seem to be experiencing an emotional reaction. Which is it?
He's annoyed with you. Uzas licked his teeth. You're insulting his pet.
I do not understand, Deltrian confessed. I speak only in realities.
Ignore him,
Talos gestured to Uzas. Tekadept, I understand your concern, but we work with the tools we have. Lucarifus, quiet for several minutes, broke his silence with a susurrating laugh.
Is that so, Soul Hunter?
Talos turned to the raptor.
You have something to say.
Did this warband not once have a warrior who could pilot vessels through the warp?
Lucarifus twitched, hissing another laugh.
Yes, yes, oh yes, it did.
Rovan is gone, leashed to the Warmaster's side, and we have no other sorcerers among us. No sorcerer is a match for a navigator, brother. One possesses the lore to guide a vessel through the warp. The other was born to do nothing else.
The raptor snorted.
Champion Halisker had sorcerers. Many 8th Legion warbands treasure them.
Lucarifus either gave a sharp nod, or his neck twitched at the right moment.
They speak of you, Soul Hunter. Tell us of the 10th, the warrior with the Primarch's gift without ever staring into the warp secrets. How many of our brothers only claim the Father's foresight after mastering the secrets of the warp? But not you. No, no, not tell us of the 10th.
Enough, Talos narrowed his eyes. This is meaningless.
Not meaningless, truth. You have been gone from the great eye too long, Prophet. You are a wanted soul. Your talents should be shaped. Sorcery is as much a weapon of this war as the blade you stole and the bolter you inherited.
Talos didn't answer. His skin crawled as his brothers in First Claw turned their eyes to him.
Is this true? Zarl asked. The Legion's warp weavers won't tell us.
Truth and true,
Lucarifus rasped. His helm's bleeding eyes stared, unwavering.
Potential bleeds from the Prophet like a black aura. Soul Hunter, did not Rovan seek to train you?
I refused, Talos shrugged. If we could focus on the matter at hand.
I was there when he refused,
Sirion smiled.
And in my brother's defense, Rovan was, at the very best of times, a piss-drinking, snide little horse, and I would have refused to loan him a weapon, let alone allow him to shape me into one.
Lucarifus crawled around the table on his metallic claws, the thrusters on his back swinging with his uneasy gait. For several steps he rose to a bipedal stalk, standing as tall as his legion brothers. But the movement clearly frustrated him. He dropped back down to all fours as he prowled by the chained sarcophagi, still idly musing in his serpent's voice.
And what of you, First Claw? Zarl, Mercutian, Uzas, what are your thoughts on the Prophet's reluctance? How do you see him now in this new light?
Zarl chuckled, offering no comment. Mercutian kept his stoic silence, his features betraying nothing.
I think, Uzas growled, you should watch your mouth. The Prophet chose his path same as all of us, same as every soul.
The warrior grunted in dismissal. The others looked at him in undisguised surprise, even Lucarifus.
Enough,
Talos snarled.
Enough. Honored Tech Adept, please continue.
Deltrian didn't miss a beat. And a discrepancy with the subsidiary feeds powering the forward lance array was acknowledged and recorded 46 minutes and 12 seconds ago, standard Terran chronology, 15 seconds, 16, 17. Talos turned to the Tech Adept.
I think what you're trying to say is that we've been lucky so far, that the ship hasn't crumbled to pieces.
Deltrian gave a faint machine-code hiss of disapproval. I would never vocalize the matter in those terms.
How long will this take to repair?
Zal asked.
All of it.
Deltrian's hood turned to face the warrior. Emerald eye lenses and a silver smile glinted in the shadow. He had the exact calculations, but suspected the Night Lords would refuse to hear them anyway.
With full crew workforce at 80% efficiency, 5.5 months.
It almost pained him to be so imprecise, but their two mortal intellects demanded compromise.
80% efficiency allows for mortal sickness, injury, death, and incompetence in the repairs.
5.5 months is a long time to be stranded in Hell's Iris, Zal scowled. What if we barter for the Blood Reaver's dock crews to aid us? We trade for materials and labor, rather than dealing with the labor ourselves. Blood Reaver.
Talos was watching the hololithic, his voice distracted by the pain in his temples.
A ridiculous title.
Sirion chuckled.
A damning statement from a warrior called Soul Hunter.
Talos covered his smile by scratching at his scarred cheek.
Continue, Tech Adept.
With the Hell's Iris work crews, the overhaul could be completed within a time frame of 1 month.
Forgive me for being the one to mention this, but we are not exactly beloved there,
Mercutian pointed out.
There's every chance the tyrant will refuse to let us dock, let alone lend us the services of his work crews. And we are not bearing a wealth of resources to barter with. We need everything we liberated from Ganges.
Just say stole,
Zal sneered at the other warrior.
Liberated? What does that even mean? You stinking city's edgers always dressing things up in pretty words.
Mercutian returned the glare, anger in his eyes.
Only inner city gutter trash steal. This is a war we're fighting, not robbing a store on a street corner for handfuls of copper coins.
Zal's nasty smile never faded.
Stern talk from the rich man's son.
Easy to use pretty words when you're up at the top of the tower, overseeing a crime syndicate where everyone else does all the dirty work. I used to shoot City's Edge juves when they came slumming in our sector. I loved every minute of it, too.
Mercutian breathed through his teeth, not saying a word. The pause lasted exactly 6.2113 seconds. Deltrian knew this, because his grasp of chronology was an exercise in numerical perfection. He ended the silence himself, offering a rare attempt at humor to pierce what he considered to be a tangential and bemusing confrontation.
If we are not allowed to dock, to use Nostraman parlance, that would be very unlucky.
The word felt unclean and uncomfortable. He immediately wished it not vocalized it, and responded in two ways. The first was a human tick of sorts, a motion of pointless reassurance that felt intriguingly mortal to indulge. He pulled his robe tighter around his skeletal frame, as if cold. He was not cold, of course. Deltrian had removed the capacity to register temperature against his epidermal surfaces, and only tracked such variances with detached measurements from thermal signifiers in his fingertips. The second reaction, taking place in the very same split second, was to dump the word from his short-term memory with a calculated data purge. It worked, though. Talos smiled at the Tech Adept's attempt at humor, and silenced the warriors with a soft,
"Brothers, enough, please! Even the Tech Adept of the Machine God looks awkward to witness yet another family argument."
"As you wish,"
Mercutian saluted, fist over his heart. Zal feigned interest in the hololithic, his sneer remaining in place.
"Lucorophus?"
Talos asked.
"Soul Hunter! Please do not call me that,"
the raptor cackled.
What do you want?
Inform the Exalted of the Tech Priest's estimated time frames.
Very well,
the raptor breathed, already turning to crawl from the room.
I don't like him,
Sirion thought aloud. Talos ignored his brother's remark.
Can you translate the details of the repairs to an encrypted data slate? I will ensure everything proceeds apace once we reach dock.
Compliance? Deltrian hesitated. But do you mean to imply that I will not be going ashore? In Hell's Iris?
Do you want to? Talos frowned. Forgive me, I hadn't considered it. First Claw will accompany you as an honor guard if you choose to leave the ship.
I offer you this expression of vocalized gratitude, the tech adept said. As an addendum to the exchange of vital linguistics, I apply a further question. Is your arm functioning to an acceptable degree?
Talos nodded.
It is. My thanks again, tech adept.
I am proud of that work,
Deltrian grinned at him. But then Deltrian always grinned. Maruk looked over to where Septimus was working. The lamplight was dim, doing no favors to Maruk's straining eyes. But he was slowly getting used to it over recent weeks.
What's this?
He held up a metal object the size of his thumb. Septimus glanced over to the older serf. Maruk's desk in the shared work chamber was a mess of drill bits, files, and oiled cloths. A half-assembled bolt pistol was scattered over the surface. Septimus put down the creased schematics he'd been studying.
A suspensor! It's for Lord Mercutian's heavy bolter.
The ship gave another shiver.
Was that?
No.
Septimus turned from Maruk's worried gaze, silently hoping Octavia would head for calmer tides.
Whatever you were going to ask, it wasn't that. Don't ask, just work.
Listen, Septimus.
I am listening.
This is a rough ride. Rougher than even the bulk transport rigs I've sailed on. What if something goes wrong?
Septimus just stared at him.
What do you plan to do? Run outside and bind the hull together with industrial adhesive? By all means, go ahead. There are a million monsters waiting to cut up your soul, and I'll have the unwelcome pleasure of training someone else.
How can you be so calm?
Maruk scratched his cheek, leaving a smear of oil on his skin.
I am calm because there's nothing I can do about it.
I've heard stories about ships getting lost in the warp.
Septimus went back to his reading, though one gloved hand rested on his holstered pistol.
Trust me, the stories do not approach the truth. The reality is much worse than your imperial fairy tales. And now is really not the time to dwell on it.
The ship gave another shake, this one severe enough to throw them both from their seats. Yells from other decks echoed through the ship's hull in an eerie cacophony.
Warp engines are dead again,
Maruk swore, touching his fingertips to a bleeding temple. He'd cracked his head on the table edge as he went down.
Synthalia Shar Vor Velvelius,
Septimus hissed as he picked himself up off the decking.
What does that mean?
The other serf brushed his gloved fingers through his hair, keeping it out of his face.
It means that woman will be the death of us.
Octavia leaned forwards in her throne, knuckling her closed eyes. Sweat dripped from her forehead onto the decking, making the soft pitter-patter of gentle rainfall. She spat, tasting blood and choosing not to look. The eye in the middle of her forehead ached from staring too long, and itched from the sweat trickling at its edges. With a sigh, she slouched back. At least the ship had ceased its trembling. If the last few times were anything to go by, she had between 1 and 3 hours rest before the Exalted ordered her to pull the ship back into the warp. This last juddering fall from the Sea of Souls had been the worst by far. Octavia felt her lingering connection to the ship, and the distress of the crew bleeding through the vessel's steel bones. People were injured this time. She'd dropped out of the warp much too sharply, though she'd held on as long as she could, until she'd almost felt her blood starting to boil.
"Mistress?"
she heard a voice ask. She knew the voice and felt how close it was. She knew if she opened her eyes, she'd see a dead girl staring back at her.
"You're not there,"
she whispered. The dead girl stroked her fingers along Octavia's knee. The navigator's skin prickled and she jerked back in her seat. Opening her human eyes was exquisitely difficult. A moment of strangely pleasant reluctance preceded the closing of her third eye, and the threshing uncolors faded to a more traditional nothingness. Her human eyes opened with some effort, gummy with tears. Hound kneeled at the front of her throne, his bandaged hands on her knee.
"Mistress,"
he almost whined.
"Hound, it's just Hound." "Water," she managed to say.
"Already have water for mistress,"
he replied. He reached beneath his tattered cloak, drawing forth a grubby-looking canteen.
"It is warm. For this, I am sorry."
She forced a smile for the eyeless freak.
"It's fine, Hound. Thanks."
The first swallow was no different from drinking honeyed nectar. She could almost imagine the sweet, warm liquid rehydrating her sore muscles. Back on Terra, she drank imported wine from crystal glasses. Now she was pathetically grateful for lukewarm water, recycled from who knew what, offered by the hand of a heretic. She was too tired to cry.
"Mistress!"
She handed him back the canteen. Her stomach sloshed with the warm water, but she didn't care.
"What is it?"
Hound wrung his wrapped hands, watching her with blind eyes.
"You are struggling to fly. I worry for you. You sweat and moan more than Etrigius ever did when he guided the ship into the secret tides."
Octavia's smile was more sincere as she wiped her face with her bandana.
"He was probably a lot better at this than I am, and he'd had more practice. I'm used to sailing within the light, not through the darkness."
Hound seemed to digest this. His withered, stitched eyes seemed to stare right at her.
"Will you be all right?"
he asked. She hesitated and realized she wasn't too tired to cry at all. His concern touched her, tingling at the corners of her eyes. Of all the tainted souls on this ship, it was this abused, malformed little man that asked her the most obvious of questions, the one even Septimus avoided asking, out of his stupid, stubborn politeness.
"Yes," she said, swallowing back the threat of tears. "I'll be fine."
The Exalted's decree cut across her words.
"All crew, remain on station. Reconfigure the Immaterium drive for return to the warp."
She sighed to herself, closing her eyes again.